So as it is the weekend, we are reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the life and teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the central character in this painting. He's called the golden incarnation of Krishna, who came disguised as a saint. So we're reading with glasses.
Prabhu kahe Krishna kripa balishta sabha hoite tumari kadila vishaya vishtagarata hoite.
Translation. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "The mercy of Lord Krishna is stronger than anything else. Therefore the Lord has delivered you from the ditch of materialistic life, which is like a hole into which people pass stool." I chose this verse, don't laugh. There's a reason. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "The mercy of Lord Krishna is stronger than anything else. Therefore, the Lord has delivered you from the ditch of materialistic life, which is like a hole into which people pass stool." Purport, or the meaning. According to the law of karma, everyone is destined to suffer or enjoy according to a certain material standard. But the mercy of Lord Krishna is so powerful that the Lord can change all the reactions of one's past karma, or fruitive activities. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically drew attention to the mercy of Lord Krishna. That mercy is more powerful than anything else, for it had saved Raghunath Das, he's the subject of our verse today and the talk, from the strong bondage of materialistic life, which the Lord compared to a hole where people pass stool. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his verdict that those addicted to the materialistic way of life are like worms that are living in that stool, but cannot give it up. A Grihavrata, one who has decided to live in a comfortable home, although it is actually miserable, is in a condemned position. Only the mercy of Krishna can save one from such misery. Without Krishna's mercy, one cannot get out of the filthy entanglement of materialistic life. It's true. The poor living entity cannot give up his materialistic position on his own. Only when granted the special mercy of Krishna can he give it up. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew very well that Raghunath Das was already liberated. Nevertheless, he emphasized that Raghunath Das's life of material comfort as a very rich man's son with a very beautiful wife and many servants to attend him was like a ditch of stool. The Lord thus specifically indicated that ordinary men who are very happy with material comforts and family life are in no better position than worms in stool. Well, gosh, Hare Krishna. Oma jnana tamarandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuram militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Hare Krishna, everyone. This is a very special privilege for me to be sitting here on this elevated seat. It's very special. Chair, one of the wedding chairs. And I thank you all for coming here today for this talk. This seems rather harsh, doesn't it? Seems rather harsh, bit harsh. That here he is, a great saint. A young man has come before him. And the young man in our story is someone who has unlimited wealth. Sometimes, due to propaganda, we think of India as being a poor place, don't we? Most people, most films that you see of India, it shows the poor people. Why does it only show poor people in India? people, you know, there's usually a picture of the girl with the hand pump. And then please send money to India. India is so poor. Why is India so poor? Well, mainly because the British Empire took $20 trillion worth of funding from it. And before that, the Mughals took the same amount. When the Nizam of Hyderabad was leaving, just as the British Empire was leaving India in 1947, the Nizam of Hyderabad had so much gold and jewelry that it took five airplanes to contain it all. My dear friends, India is not poor. There was unlimited wealth, great amount of wealth, jewels, gold, all kinds of items, all kinds of riches, and very clever business people, and very clever kings. India was a land of great wealth. So for Raghunath Das to have a very rich father should not be such a great thing. However, here we have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying, it's like a ditch into which people pass still. Very graphic, isn't it? You should imagine, though, that when these words came out of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mouth, the people around him laughed. That's the whole point. It's such a graphic example. It's meant to make us laugh. A lot of you are very serious, taking it, oh my God. But at the same time, it's very true. In our Krishna consciousness philosophy, there are two aspects. One is known as Vyavaharika, and one is known as Paramartika. Vyavaharika means conventional wisdom, conventional life. Life of hard work, happiness, reward, charity, compassion, religion, worshipping God, praying to God to help you, and being in the receipt of help. This is Vyavaharika. Vyavaharika also means convention. It means if I say to you, who are you? You say, well, I'm... Then you give your... Maybe if it's at the airport, you give your nationality, you give your passport, and in your passport there's a photograph. And this photograph shows the picture that you see when you look in the mirror. This is me. Here is me. This is my name and address, my nationality, the flag I salute, my name, my number, my identity, or in other circumstances, my social security code. Could you blow into this bag for me, sir? I give my driving license. And it shows who I am. These are all conventional realities. It's real, but it's not the ultimate. Paramartika means, what are you really? What's the real person within? And Bhagavad Gita ushers us into the understanding that it's the soul within, the person within. And the soul is brighter than 10,000 suns. It is eternal. It is ageless, it was never born, it will never die. We know these things. Paramartika means that we act in that wisdom. Paramartika also means that I see all as being equal. The rich man, the poor man, I see them as the same. The tree, the dog, the elephant, the Brahmin, I see them all as equal, equal standing. Which we normally say, yes, that's spiritual vision. Nevertheless, we're called upon to see with the eyes of reality as well. Because if I look at a tiger and I see the spirit soul within the tiger, and I say, I just feel so loving and compassionate today. Let me embrace the tiger. And I embrace the tiger. What will happen? The tiger will embrace me. but he will lick his lips at the same time. Have you ever seen a tiger up close? Seen a tiger? Yeah, just wild. I saw a dog walking across the road. I thought it was a big dog, like a Labrador or something, because that was my mindset. Only I was going along in a taxi in India, in Andhra Pradesh, and I saw a big dog walking across the road. I'm an English man, conventional. I thought it was a dog. I got a... What do Englishmen do in India? They pat dogs. So the window was open to get some... And I reached out my hand to pat the dog. Foolish thing, don't pat dogs. And in this case, don't pat anything that looks like a dog. And as we were passing by in the taxi, midnight, it went... It wasn't a dog, it was a tiger. Yeah. So I had superimposed, I'd mentally projected an identity on the tiger, and I'd labeled it as dog, only it wasn't a dog. So there's a problem there. We mentally project and we label many things as being something that they're not. And, what to do? So if you mentally project upon the tiger that I see all living beings as equal, we're all one, I'm a spirit soul, you're a spirit soul, then what will happen? You'll end up as someone's dinner, or maybe even a little snack. So Vyavaharika is important in protection of the body, so that you can live a little bit longer, so that you can do this thing called life. So for that, Vyavaharika is very important. And say I want to build a house. I want to build a house. I see everybody as equal. It's like one of our ISKCON projects. I shall not mention where it was. But he called upon the services of a builder to create an extension to the temple. Unfortunately, the person wasn't a builder. He was a thief dressed as a builder. And he could not build. And so the end became very expensive. So the point is, if you want to build an extension, choose a builder. And therefore you have to qualify. You cannot say, you're a spirit soul, you're a spirit soul, you're a spirit soul, and get the tiger to build your house, or the unqualified builder. So these are Vyavaharika, or conventional identities. And it's like that in religion as well. Religion has two aspects, Vyavaharika and Paramarthika. Vyavaharika, religion says, look, we're all in this together, we're all human beings. The ultimate aim of life is to be peaceful, right? So that we can all get on. There's a big trouble in the world today is that we just can't get on. Isn't it? Big problem. He's black, I'm white. Let's stand and fight. You're this, I'm that. Well, I've got a problem with you, you've got a problem with me. I'm red, you're blue. You know, we stand at opposite ends of the football ground so that we don't fight. So differences cause problems. That's a conventional wisdom. Differences cause problems. So therefore, let's reduce all the differences and we'll be peaceful. Is that right? Sort of conventional wisdom, isn't it? Unfortunately, if you overlook Paramarthika and you overlook and you think that everybody is equal, then you have a problem, because your house doesn't get built, or you get eaten by a tiger, or you're unprotected. Not everybody is equal. Not everybody likes you equally. Some people don't like you. I know that you're all very nice people. Very nice people. Sitting here on a Sunday morning when you could be having a lie-in. You've come to this beautiful building. Thank you very much. But not everybody likes you. Not everybody likes you. They see you as something different. You don't eat the food that I eat. You don't sing the songs that I eat. You definitely don't wear the clothes that I wear. I don't like you. So let's reduce all the differences until we get a kind of mush. In other words, he's the peas, Here's the chips, right? Here's the samosas. Let's pull them all in a Vitamix, put them all in a blender, and add some water. It's going to look like that ultimately, anyway, in your stomach, after you've gone through the process of chewing. Let's put it all in a blender and just drink the nice meal. Would you like that as a proposal? No, because variety is the mother of enjoyment. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. In the old days, it was quite the fashion. We offer nice things on the nice foods. This is behind the curtains now. They're offering food to Krishna. So there's nice samosas and nice rice and this and that. In the old days, it was the custom, so that you wouldn't discriminate between one type of mahaprasadam and another, that someone would get all of the maha on a plate and mush it with their hands, completely break it down so it looked like khichdi, and then serve it. I have to tell you, that idea did not last too long. It wasn't so palatable, because conventionality gives us enjoyment, it gives us protection, and it gives us different understandings as well. For instance, we talk about things being appropriate for people to engage with. Just like you go to a school, there's appropriate speech, appropriate lessons, appropriate games for a certain age group. And in a school, you're very conscious of the different ages, because you're progressing people, young people, from one stage to another. So conventionality is very important to growth. So for any human civilization to progress, there must be a concept of where are we now and what are we progressing towards? What's the ultimate state for human society? So that is conventionality. Postmodernism means that we reject that, and in an idea of spirituality, we reject the notion of difference. We reduce difference. We try to turn society into mush. This postmodernism is something that's been going on since the 1960s. And I say that because, to a certain extent, each and every one of us is affected by postmodernism. It's just a shelf full of ideas that touch on architecture, politics, human organization, education, agriculture, food production, just about everything is touched by this. And it's the idea that comes about when I have a notion of spirituality, which means equality, and I project that onto conventionality, which means difference. Do you see? So people say, men, women, they're all the same. Whereas conventional reality says, well, I'm not too sure about that. No. Men can have cervixes. Women can have penises. It's all possible. So it's a postmodern projection onto a reality. And we're trying to work that out. But it doesn't quite work. And so there's a pushback. And whenever there's a pushback, then the person will be seen as a disturber of the peace. We're just here trying to do something spiritual to make everybody equal, everything equal, children and adults equal, men and women equal, everybody's opinion equal. Well, I'm sorry, not everybody's opinion is equal, no matter what you read on the internet. Some people are architects. Some people are really bad architects. And some people really are scientists. And you're not a scientist, are you? You're not a scientist. So why is your opinion equal to someone who is? You're not a historian. But in the so-called egalitarian world, everybody is turning to mush. Society is turning to mush. And our brains are turning to mush as well. I just thought I'd begin with this sort of easy topic. And the reason we have to be very careful is because faced with this very mushy but spiritually sounding idealism, it's possible to lose the point. So the point here is that there's two Krishna consciousnesses. There's Krishna consciousness in Vyavaharika and Krishna consciousness in Paramartika. Paramartika is you're not a man, you're not a woman, you're a spirit soul in transit with luggage. Your body is luggage, your mind is luggage from your last life. And you're in transit now. Don't get comfortable. Anybody start putting up wallpaper in the transit lounge of an airport? You don't, do you? You don't flip through the IKEA catalog to find your favorite chair so that you can install it right by the baggage carousel. No one does that because you know you're in transit. So a person who really knows that they're in transit between one life and another, you don't get comfortable. You're just in transit. This is temporary. Everything's temporary. So here in this verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying to this young man who has unlimited family wealth, he's saying, don't get comfortable. In another place, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is speaking with conventionality or Vyavaharika. He's saying, no, you're a king, I'm a sannyasi. You know, you should behave like this. I can't talk to you because this is my... Is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a sannyasi? No. Is he appearing as a sannyasi? Yes. So this is, you appear in conventionality. Anyway, I hope that's quite simple, isn't it? So, today is, and the reason why I've chosen this verse, which seems to be inordinately and excessively, stark, certainly for me as a married man with children, that I should read out a verse like that. Well, this verse is perhaps the verse which identified Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's relationship with Raghunath Das Goswami. Each of the Goswamis, or the early followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, had a unique characteristic, a unique contribution that they gave to the Sampradaya. And so this contribution of Raghunath Das Goswami was his, you could call it a fierce simplicity. A fierce simplicity. And he was not a conventional appreciator in any way. It started when he wanted to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was born in the year 1494. And he died. He passed away. He left this world on this day in 1586. He was a disciple of Yadunandan Acharya. His father was Govardhan Majumdar of Saptagram in the district of Hooghly, which is now, you can go to that place if you go to Calcutta. Calcutta used to be a village called Kaligata, the bathing place of Kali. And the British took it and used it as a military garrison because it was close to the sea and had, you know, the Ganges was coming there, so that it was good for venturing inland as well. And of course the little village of Kaligata became three villages and then became the capital city of British India. Anyway, now it just goes on for miles and miles and miles. Practically Calcutta, the city, goes on for, 40, 50 miles, doesn't it? It's swallowed up all the other places. Raghunath Das Goswami is counted amongst the six Goswamis. And one of the key vignettes from his life is when he goes to, as a young man, try to join Nityananda Prabhu in the nearby village of Panihati. And Panihati is very near there. There was a place that Lord Nityananda, the locals, when you go to Panihati, it's very nice. The locals are trying to, Lord Nityananda was trying to find a place to stay. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given him the instruction to get married, which was him entering into conventionality. Okay, so here's an instruction from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that you should get married. Here's to an instruction to Raghunath Das Goswami, I'm glad you haven't. I'm glad you're broken free. So instructions are different for everybody. Just in case you're really worrying that you're living in a ditch. So just one time there was a young student of a veterinary surgeon in India. There are such things. Sometimes we don't think there is, but there's vets in India that care for sick animals. So he was a student. And one time he was walking with his guru. Anybody who's a teacher in India is called a guru. So he was walking with his guru down the road, and they saw a horse that was choking. And the guru said, "What is the matter with this horse?" He said, "Oh, he swallowed a melon." The horse swung, you could see the big bulge in the horse's neck, you know, with a melon. He swallowed a melon whole without chewing. Not recommended. So the guru took a stick and he whacked the horse's neck from the outside. And the horse coughed up the melon and was all right. Horse's life was saved. And the boy took note. And a couple of weeks later, the boy was walking by himself down the same street, and he saw a beggar. The beggar had his hand out, and he had a big swelling in his neck. Had a goiter, which is produced from an iodine deficiency. Why are you laughing? He said, "Help." The beggar said, "Help me, help me." He said, "I can help you." He said, "My guru has told me a way to help you with specifically your complaint." He began bashing him in the neck. So what was medicine for the horse was not medicine for the man. This is the point. One time, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and he was surrounded by sannyasis, and he was giving them such a class, you know, like this, and he was saying, "So this is, you know, material life is just, you know, attachments. You're very lucky that you've given it up. Use this one short life for Krishna." Like that. They were going even taller and taller as they realized, yes, he's complimenting us for having done the right thing, holding on to their dandas, you know. And so the next person to come and see Prabhupada was the temple president, and he wanted to get married. And one sannyasi, he said, "I'll go and get him." He was smiling. He came out and he said to the young man, he said, "You want to get married? You're going to get it." He said, "You're going to get it from Prabhupada. He's in such a renounced mood." So he went in to see Prabhupada and said, "So you want to get married?" "Yes, Prabhupada, but I didn't think it was appropriate here in Vrindavan." Prabhupada said, "No, no, that's good. It's good that you get married. It's good that you live in Vrindavan. Very good. Thank you." So sannyasis were very shocked. How could Prabhupada turn on a sixpence? Well, the reason is because, of course, medicine for one person is not medicine for the other person. Most of us are a blend of, you know, Vyavaharika and Paramartika from day to day and from decade to decade. So we need what is appropriate for us. This is what Raghunath Das Goswami needed. So anyway, he seems to be dealt with quite harshly by Lord Nityananda. So Nityananda was in this place. He had gone after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him to get married. And he said that he was looking for a place in this village. But he was with a local zamindar, a landlord. He wanted to, you know, you don't buy a house in those days, you build one. Okay, and he built it as big as you like. So he was looking for a place, and he said, "What about this place?" Landlord said, "No, So what about this? He said, no. What about this? He said, no. And the landlord was, this is a local story that they tell. The landlord was smoking a hubbly bubbly, a hookah. And he was just smoking like this and blowing it. Lord Nityananda was getting, shall we say, to the end of his considerable temper. And he said, well, what about this place? And he pulled some straw from the bottom of the hubbly bubbly pipe and he threw it. Oh, no, excuse me. He said, well, then there's nowhere I can live in your village. The landlord said, correct. He said, you can live here, though. And he took some the landlord took some straw and he threw it into the water. He said, you can live there. And at that moment, as you know, at this point in the Ganges, the water and the land and the water are changing every day. Have you seen that? You can go to the Ganges River and sometimes you see a riverbank just emerge out of the water and you see the cliffs crumbling into the water. So that moment there was a big change and a piece of land right where the man had thrown the straw, this land rose out of the water and looked very firm. And Lord Nityananda said, thank you very much. So near that place is this place we know as Panihati. And you can still go there today. And I think ISKCON has purchased the land now. We have a center there. You can go right down to the water. And the tree under which Nityananda received Raghunath Das Goswami is still there, still available. So he said to him, he saw him at the edge of the crowd. And he said, come here, you thief. Where is it that wherever Raghunath Das Goswami goes, he gets a hard time? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells him, you're living in a worm-filled ditch of stool. Nityananda says, you're a thief. He says, you want to steal Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from me? You have to get through me first. Come here, you thief. And so he made his way to Lord Nityananda, and then Nityananda took his foot and put it on his head, which, for those of you who are new, I will hasten to say that this is a great blessing. And so everybody who was gathered there said, Haribo, Haribo. He said, but your punishment for trying to steal Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, is that you have to use your wealth of your father to feed all the Vaishnavas here. And so he asked him, he said, you feed everyone with chipped rice. And if that doesn't, rice that has been put through, flattened rice. But if it doesn't sound very nice, it says rice and curd mixed in with the rice, sugar and bananas. And the other item was condensed milk with rice, sugar, ghee, and camphor. That's quite a nice meditation before breakfast, isn't it? So he fed all the Vaishnavas, and of course everyone felt very wonderfully cared for. Eventually, though, from being a purveyor of food to others, Raghunath goes and he becomes a very renounced person. And he lives in Jagannath Puri, and he spends 22 hours a day chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now sometimes people come to me and they say, Kripa Moya, I'm having trouble chanting Hare Krishna. Every day I'm chanting. I say, how many rounds are you doing? They go, I'm doing 4. I said, you're having trouble? Yeah. So I get to 3 and I just can't do the fourth. I say, okay. Then I say, you're living in a ditch filled with stool. No, I don't. I try to say something very nice. I say, okay, could you do 3.5? This is Raghunath Das Goswami, 22 hours a day. His whole life was chanting. He served Lord Chaitanya for 16 years until the Lord passed away in 1534. But after that, he went to live in Vrindavan in 1543, and he lived by Radha Kund, which is a lake dedicated to Srimati Radharani. And even though he was chanting so much, he still found time to write. Someone was saying to me the other day, he said, well, I'd like to write a book, but I've just got so much to do. I've got to work and I've got to chant my rounds and I've got to do everything, look after the family. And I said, do you want to write a book? I said, just write. Don't write a book. Just take it out of your head that you're writing a book and write a page. Write a page a day. And very soon, you'll have written a book. So just little drip, 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 drip. Just like the stone. The stone was looking at the waterfall. He said, the stone said to the waterfall, he said, you're soft, I'm hard. You're not going to do anything on me. But the stone just waited and waited, and drip by drip by drip by drip, the soft water made a hole in the stone. So in the same way, drip by drip by drip by drip, we are dedicating our self to God. And on a day-to-day basis, we may not see that much improvement. Or we may not think that we see so much improvement. And Prabhupada one time, he said, that is not the way to calculate. He said, it is like going in a plane. He said, just like I came here in a plane. He said, I was on the ground, and I did not look out the window. A few minutes later, I was above the clouds. And I thought, how has this happened? How did this happen? So if you look and you wait, it is like watching milk boil. It never boils if you watch it. Or if you go away, it always boils over. Isn't it? If you watch something, it never boils. If you don't watch at all, then it will boil over. Anyway, so he wrote in his life of 22 hours chanting a day. He wrote Dana Keli Kaumudi Chintamani. He wrote a book called Stavavali. He wrote Manashiksha. He wrote Vilap Kusumanjali and Brajavilas Stava. And he was very integral in the next person's life as well. Because Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami also disappeared today. And we may think, how is it that so many great saints arranged to leave the world all on the same day? Sometimes we have that, don't we? What's that one in spring where there's so many of them on the same day? But sometimes it happens like that. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was living in, also in Bengal. Big incident in his life which set him off in his new direction. And the reason why we have this verse written on the board is because it's from a book that he wrote at the end of the 16th century. He was living in a place, he was the son of Bhagirath and Sunanda, who died early. He was brought up by relatives, him and his brother. But in those days, unlike today, when we have an established position on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there was no established position. In the years after the disappearance of Lord Jesus Christ, there were lots of positions on who Jesus was. He's a human being who completely understands God. He is God the Son. He is an incarnation of the Word of God. He is God himself become flesh. He's sometimes God and sometimes not God. He's completely God and completely human. There's all these different opinions. Well, there was many opinions on who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there was definitely opinions on who is Nityananda Prabhu. You know, we get our opinions down through 500 years of parampara. Notably, Chaitanya Charitamrita clarifies, and it clarified for the entire Vaishnava community of the day, different positions. But this is, I speak too soon. So, the brother of What was his name? The brother of Krishnadas Kaviraj? I forget his name. No, that was the devotee who was insulted, wasn't it? Aminiketan Ram was insulted by Krishnadas's brother. I forget. He said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yes, perhaps, maybe he's great. Maybe he's this or that. But Nityananda Prabhu, no. I don't accept him. I accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but not Nityananda Prabhu. And of course, Krishnadas Kaviraj said, how can you possibly accept that? They are brothers. They are the two lords. And so Aminiketan Ram felt insulted to hear this, and he went away. And immediately, Krishnadas rejected his brother. He cut off ties with his brother. That night, he had a dream, and Nityananda came to him as a cowherd boy with a red stick and a turban, but with blue skin. He said, Krishnadas, and he was surrounded by cowherd boys who were fanning him, you know. He said, Krishnadas, go to Vrindavan, for there you will attain all things. And so Krishnadas immediately began. When you have a very powerful dream, sometimes it's just a dream. Like the other night, I was being chased around the alleys of a strange town by someone with a double-bore shotgun. It really happened. It was really happening until I woke up. Then I woke up and I realized it was all a dream. But there are some dreams where a devotee gets a message, and the emotions in the dream and the emotions during when you wake up are the same emotions. So you realize that was not just a dream. So it is said that Paramatma, the indwelling portion of God who gives us conscious understanding, confirms for you that was not a dream. That was me. And then you wake up and you think, now I have to act on that dream. So please don't come to me with your dreams. Prabhuji, last night I had a dream. Can you tell me whether this is real or not? Prabhupada came to me in a dream. Yes. You might have a dream of Prabhupada. Maybe real. Maybe not real. If Prabhupada is chasing you around alleyways with a double-bore shotgun, then it's probably not real. I've also had dreams like that. Don't think Prabhupada ever used a shotgun. So we have to understand not everything which is a dream is real. Not everything which is real is a dream. Okay? Not everything which is a dream is a dream. Okay? You're getting the flow. So he said, I must immediately start for Vrindavan. And there he did attain all things because he took initiation from Raghunath Bhatta, who we don't hear much about, but Raghunath Bhatta, his disappearance day is also today. Okay? So, the reason we hear of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and 500 years later we're still talking about his life, is because he wrote a book known as the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, immediately after our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada passed away in 1977, there was immediately talk of a biography. We have to write a biography. Because that's what you do when a great person leaves the world. Then that, so to speak, bookends their life. It began here, it ends here. And what a great contribution they made. So we have to write about it. So immediately devotees were being interviewed all over the world. And we have to get the Prabhupada disciples to speak about Srila Prabhupada because they're old. I think at the time some of them were 40. we have to get them to speak about Prabhupada because they may have one story where Prabhupada said something which is so important for my life. Now, these days, even as a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, I can say Prabhupada said, and not one person in the audience believes me. You know why? Because the next question they ask me is, Prabhupada, could you just give me a quote for that, where Prabhupada said that? So these days, not only do you have to be a disciple of Prabhupada, but you also have to be a bloomin' historian. You have to know exactly what chapter, what verse, exactly what letter, where was Prabhupada. Is that the quote that he said in L.A., or was it Gainesville, or was it Atlanta, Georgia? Where did he say that? Or was it Tokyo? And you, as soon as you say something like, well, I think Prabhupada said it, as soon as you say, I think, they go, oh, he's not bona fide. He's not authorized. So we live in a day now where you can, you know, because the falsification begins, doesn't it? Falsification begins. At one time in Italy, there was a pushback against our movement, and there was pictures being circulated. This is even before the days of the internet. There was a photograph being circulated of a man, curiously enough, in camouflage outfit with a machine gun, and his face was A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And they were circulating this image, the anti-cult people, and they said, see, this is, he dresses like a saint, but this is how he dresses when they have their private meetings. And because people weren't, there was no Photoshop in those days, they were just clever, you know, clever photography. But still some people believed it. So we live in an age when you have to validate every statement, unfortunately. But one time Prabhupada said. Anyway, what did Prabhupada say? What was I talking of? I forget. So, yes, the biographies of Prabhupada. So immediately after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they wanted to write biographies. And some said he was a great philosopher, and for him to be accepted by the scholarly community, we have to write books in Sanskrit. Sanskrit will get us accepted by the scholarly pundit community. And some people said, no, he was a great Bengali saint. He was our boy from our town. We have to write in Bengali, and we'll write the narratives so that every Bengali will know about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So there was, in between 1534 and 1634, there was 12 biographies written. 12 biographies of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Have you heard of them? No, you haven't, have you? We don't get to hear them. Why do we hear about Chaitanya Charitamrita and not the others so much? I'll tell you why. Because of the first 6 biographies, 3 were completely in Bengali, and 3 were completely in Sanskrit. So this created divisions between people who spoke Bengali and those who understood Sanskrit. Although we get our, you know, we're used to, in our philosophy books, or in Prabhupada's speaking, he will move effortlessly from Sanskrit to Bengali, and Bengali back to Sanskrit. It's just like first gear, second gear. And you don't even realize, you just think, I'm on a car ride. I'm going to, someone change gear, but I don't really feel any difference because I'm being taken along. Bengali, my dear friends, is a completely, completely different language from Sanskrit. Completely, completely different language. Although some Sanskrit appears in Bengali. Bengali is a language that appeared at a certain point. It's got lots of Persian mixed in it. It's got bits of Arabic. It's got bits of, you know, Sanskrit mixed in it. Sanskrit is the language of Devanagari. It's the language of the ancient Vedas. So it's like a difference between modern English and Latin, where Sanskrit is the Latin and modern English is the Bengali. Completely different. And yet, it's all foreign to us, isn't it? So when Prabhupada is speaking, so sarva dharman parichaja, Sanskrit, so Bharata Bhumi De Hoi Manusha Janma Yara, Bengali. We just sort of hear it as a melange, don't we? It's just Prabhupada speaking, taking us for this philosophical car ride. But in those days, it was two completely different things. There was the Krishna Chaitanya Charitamrita by an old doctor who lived in the same village as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and watched him grow up. And he wrote that in 1535. His name was Murari Gupta. And he'd kept diaries of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got up to when he was a boy, up until the time when he took sannyas and he left Navadvipa. Then his diaries finished. There was no more. So his biography was not only Sanskrit, but it was incomplete. Then the Chaitanya Mangala by Lochan Das Thakur, yes. And another Chaitanya Mangala by Jayananda. Now, you wouldn't think that two people would produce a book with the same name roughly around the same time about the same subject, but they did, and it was okay. Then there was the Krishna Chaitanya Charitamrita Mahakavya by Kavi Karnapur in ornate Sanskrit poetry. Beautiful. But it left the Bengalis alienated because they couldn't read it. Couldn't even hear it when it was recited. In those days, there weren't books, there were recitations. That's why we get Old Testament recited in a synagogue, and New Testament is based on the recitations of the Old Testament in the synagogue, where Jesus' activities closely parallel what was being read at that particular point in the year in the synagogue, because the first Christians were Jews. There were no churches, they would go to the synagogue. So these recitations had to be in the language that you spoke. If Prabhupada had gone to Tokyo first, right, all our books would be in Japanese. And the GBC would be all Japanese. And would you have joined? I don't think so. So then came the Chaitanya Chandradoya Nataka. And, excuse me, I can't remember who that was for. But the final biography, the seventh biography, not quite the final, there was another five, but the seventh one was by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. And the reason why it was so successful is it because united two groups of Vaishnavas. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been born and grew up in Bengal and Puri. In Bengal, there was a group of devotees headed up by Nityananda. Bengali speaking, couldn't speak Sanskrit, married, going door to door, village to village, preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, kirtan and prasadam. What's wrong with that? That's the whole thing, right? That's what we do. In Vrindavan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had sent the Goswamis there, first of all, Bhugarbha Goswami and Lokanath Goswami, to excavate Vrindavan so that there was a Vrindavan to go to. You know, it wasn't just trees. And they went there, but they didn't write anything. They were guides. They could show people. They could speak, but they didn't write. But the six Goswamis, they wrote. But they wrote in Sanskrit. So this whole scholarly Sanskrit development took place in Vrindavan. Meanwhile, there's a whole Bengali development. They think they know who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. In Vrindavan, they think they know who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. So there's two different philosophies. In Puri, they also say they know who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was. Nityananda Prabhu says it's all about preaching. Jagannath Puri says, no, it's all about esoteric discussions and inner moods and ecstatic trances. And in Vrindavan, it's an exposition of, you know, detailed philosophy. So what is it? Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami harmonized all those different conceptions by bringing together the works of different people. There are parts of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that are pure Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has Lord Chaitanya speaking words directly from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu on the understanding that Rupa Goswami must have written down exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, but verse per verse, it is there. Some places, he brings together the... well, the book is based around Sanskrit verses, sort of like the post is a Sanskrit verse, and the fence between the posts is Bengali. So we have 1,500 Sanskrit verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita, 10,000 Bengali. 1/6 of the Sanskrit in Chaitanya Charitamrita is directly from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And 75 other books are also quoted. And none of the other biographies goes this far. So what he did was he took the diaries of Murari Gupta that came, then he took the teachings of the later pastimes of Chaitanya, which were personally witnessed by Swarup Damodar. From Swarup Damodar it was given to Raghunath Bhatta. Raghunath Bhatta, being his guru, spoke all about this. So he took from different places and he put it all together. And so we get the book not only because Prabhupada translated it, but because it was the most successful biography, and it was embraced by everyone, both Bengali speaking and Sanskrit reading. And the reason why it's important for us is because pretty much, apart from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, pretty much for us, Chaitanya Charitamrita is the book which gives the theological identity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You won't get that in the Bhagavad Gita. You don't get that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a couple of verses, Krishna Varnam Tushar Krishna. We don't find out who the great apostle of love of God, who is the golden avatar, who is Krishna appearing in the world as a devotee. We don't get that from Bhagavatam or Gita. We get it from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So what makes the Gaudiya Sampradaya, our Sampradaya, what it is, and the reason why we don't have ongoing disputes with people in Bengal and Puri and New York and Tokyo, is because the theological identity and the philosophy was harmonized 500 years ago for us. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was accepted as the exalted author and contributor of this. So that's why we turn to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada mentioned that on his journey from India to New York, he said, Chaitanya Charitamrita gives me solace, gives me great solace. And that's why he wanted it, published very quickly. He did an early version which was called The Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which also contained the life. No one reads that book anymore. You can hardly buy it. Who's read it? Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. I stand corrected. Ladies, who's read Teachings of Lord Chaitanya? A few little hands. Yeah. It's, have a look, because if you can see it on the bookshelf in the reception, you may not get it. It was superseded, you could say, by the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Prabhupada brought out in 17 volumes in 1975. I remember it well when we got them from Los Angeles, first in England. They brought in on red cushions into our temple over in Bury Place in London. Great achievement. They worked really, really hard to paint all the pictures, take all the photographs, and to produce 17 volumes of hardback books in how many months? Not very much, was it? Devotees were working flat out. One artist, basically three artists would paint a painting. One artist would fall asleep, and the other artist would say, Prabhuji, let me take over now. And another one would start. He or she would fall asleep painting. Another one would say, I'm ready to start all over again. So it was a marathon, a real marathon. And what to speak of the publishing, the indexing, And it was all analog in those days, not digital. And so, and then the distribution. And then we finally got to read them sometime in 1970, early 77. Today we're also celebrating the disappearance of Raghunath Bhatta. He wrote a commentary on the Krishna Karanamrita, which is a scripture that was written by Bilva Mangal Thakur. And it was discovered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on his travels through South India, along with the Brahma Samhita. And just say it very loudly with me so that we remember him on this day. His commentary on this is called the Sarangada. Rangada. Kangada. Tika. That's his book. So today, in the afternoon, I do believe we are also celebrating Vijayadashmi. Is that right? We're going to burn Ravana tonight. So that's great fun. Great annual fun. In North India, they celebrate the burning of Ravana. In South India, they celebrate Satyabhama killing Banasura. Krishna was with Satyabhama, his wife, his queen. And Banasura was, he was a kidnapper. He'd kidnapped lots of princesses. Krishna set them free. But he had a very well-protected headquarters. There was moats, and there was electric cable, and there was barbed wire, and there was all kinds of things. But Krishna got all the way through, chiefly with the use of Garuda. So went over the top. And there was a great battle. Now, in South India, they say Krishna did not shoot the final arrow that killed Banasura. And then they go, it was Satyabhama. Satyabhama, like this, his queen. So they celebrate Queen Satyabhama and her final slaying of Banasura. One time I was in Tirupati, and I went up to see the deities in Tirupati. And then it was, you know, how sunset comes very quickly in India. Sunset comes, 6 o'clock, the lights go out. What happened? What happened? Who turned the lights off? It's called sunset, Prabhu. Happens the same time every day. And so as we were coming down the mountain from the Tirumala Hill, we looked out over Tirupati, the town, and there was all these fireworks set off in the night sky, so it all looked very nice. However, we got to the ISKCON compound. Were we celebrating Dussehra? No. We were celebrating, Narakasura, Naraka Chaturdashi. Anyway, they do a big, big effigy. They set fire to it, like Dussehra, like we're going to do tonight. And they set off fireworks. You have never seen anything in your life like Indian fireworks. Indian fireworks are just mad. You know, British fireworks are just like, oh, wasn't it nice, Johnny? Yes, yes, Mummy, it was really nice. You see the green flame, this big. Yes, Mummy, it was wonderful. Indian kid would look at that and say, that's not fireworks. So this firework display, it was like they were rockets. I mean, I'm talking, they're talking, Hezbollah, Hamas rockets, but it shoulder launched from a drain pipe. Boom. And one went into the sky and it exploded and showered, like there was, it must have been about 1,500 people there. And it showered us with ash. The ash. Not holy ash. Just the ashes. Some kid got a drain pipe and set one off, and it went right into the crowd. And everybody was laughing. The people are throwing fireworks. Don't do this at home, kids. This is India. Some they escape bad karma. And if they lose an eye, they go, mercy of Krishna. Anyway, so you know the story. Ram conquered 2 days ago, 3 days ago. Ram conquered over Ravan. And it was at the end of a great period, and Ravan was, the great evil king was destroyed by Ram's arrow. So we celebrate that day by burning an effigy. It's our Guy Fawkes night. And if we don't celebrate someone who tried to blow up Parliament, we celebrate someone who was trying to steal Lakshmi from Vishnu. So on this day, on Vijay Dashami day, it's Vijay, victory, and Dashami, the 10th day. That's why it's also called Dashami, the 10th day, Dashara, or Dushera. Dushera means the 10th day. Comes at the end of Navaratri. Navaratri. And I'm looking in this direction for the secret Navaratri celebrants. And it was in this day also that Arjuna took his weapons back from the Shami tree. He put them. He hid his weapons in a tree before his exile, and he went to that tree, offered prayers, and took those weapons down, his divine weapons, took them out of the tree, and then he went to war with the Kurus. So before the battle of Kurukshetra, there was like a warm-up battle, and he defeated them all, and they all ran. So because Arjuna did that on that day, he's also sometimes called Vijay. And in some parts of India, they celebrate Arjuna rather than Ram. Just so you know. Hare Krishna. Oh, thank you. That was my short class. That's the short version. Any questions? We've got till 9 o'clock. Yes, sir, at the back. Heckler. Is this a please, Prabhu? Can you substate what chapter and what verse is that? I feel like it's Live Aid or something today. I finish this class and immediately I fly to New York to give a class there, but through the miracle of Zoom. We've got another class over there. Different class, different verse. Yes, Prabhuji.
Thank you so much for the class. To the start, you're mentioning about how it's easy to cause, easy to segregate people in terms of this is my group, this is their group, and this is the level of animosity. And I was just thinking in terms of like recent news coming out about persecution of various different groups in certain countries, that perhaps hits home for us a little bit. If we have a particular obligation towards that, and what is our response in those situations?
Yes. It's so sensitive, we can't even mention the name of the group, can we? How do we respond to that? When people like you are killed, one or two? Two now. It's two now, he died. Huh? So this is an attack by a mob of 200 on one of our temples in Bangladesh. So we try to acknowledge that we're all on a human path. They're all trying to understand God in our own way. And we try to practice tolerance and acceptance of another's path. At the same time, we have to protect ourselves because tigers bite and you cannot embrace the tiger. So if there's a religious discipline that says that you should not exist, or that we will give you three options. One is to convert, one is to pay tax and accept our supremacy, or die. What's our response to that? It happened in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They were not allowed to ring a bell for aarti. Do you know that? They were not allowed to ring a bell. Yes, you can do your things, but just do them behind closed doors. They were not allowed to blow a conch. That's why the Qazi came and sent his soldiers to destroy the Mridanga drum. Because the sound of the Mridanga drum was going out into the street. And it wasn't allowed, it was against the law. That's why they came and smashed the drums. And I did notice in the photographs from that terrible event a few days ago that the first thing they smashed was the Mridanga. Did you see? Smash Mridanga. So let's be under no illusion. There are people who don't accept you. There are also people living in this country that would rather that you didn't exist. Currently in the minority, but you have to establish a pushback. Our pushback is not against people, it's against ideas. There is no philosophy. Our basic idea is there's no philosophy which is beyond discussion. Let's just deal with that first, before we even talk about communities or rivalries or animosity. Let's just talk about that. There is no idea that is beyond discussion. Let's sit down and discuss it. Can we discuss it without being labeled phobic? At the moment, you can't. And this is why I say that we live in a very dangerous time. It's very dangerous because even thought is being policed. Even speech is being policed. So, therefore, we say, we've had enough of this now. We've had enough. We have to push back. Devotees are very... There was the old story of a snake that became a bhakta. And he came... Narada Muni was his guru. And everybody feared him because he was a cobra. When he became a snake... when he became a bhakta... He didn't, there was no fierceness. He became too gentle. And he came to Narada Muni and he said to Narada Muni, I became a bhakta. I became non-violent. I practice ahimsa. I don't bite anybody. I don't chase anybody. He said, what can I do? He said, now they all throw sticks and stones at me. And Narada Muni, you know what Narada Muni said? He said, you have to practice non-violence. He said, but occasionally you have to raise your hood. You have to raise your hood. There was a time in London when I was repeatedly arrested just for singing on the street. Just for singing on the street. Can you believe it? This is a book distribution. Yes, that's questionable at the best of times. You've stopped a person going about their duty on the street. That's contravening the 1837 Highway Obstruction Act. Okay, we would regularly, based on that 1837 Act, be taken to jail. That's jail, not prison. You get a £5 fine for selling books. So then, what we did in the late... 83, 84... We said, this is too much. You know, we do Harinam. This is the very religion that we, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has come to give the world. So when we go down Oxford Street, how can we be arrested? To be arrested on Oxford Street means that we can't do Harinam anywhere. It becomes a culture then. So we had to stop it becoming a culture. So we tried at defending ourselves, standing up in court, saying we're practicing our religion, but there is no religious freedom in the United Kingdom. In America, you get the, whatever amendment it is for the practicing of religious freedom. But you don't have the same thing in England. Everything is done by precedent. I've had to stand in the dock in court defending giving out prasadam. You may not know this, but we had to go through a lot of court cases to do the things that we now consider to be ordinary things. We would offer boiled sweets, different fruit flavors, to Radha Gokulananda in the morning. And we'd go down the street and give them out. We were arrested for that. And I went to court in Greenwich, and the judge said, I'd brought some with me, and he said, Pass them over for me. He said, he looked at them, he picked them up like this, and he looked at them. They were prasadam, but they were still in their wrappers. He said, this is not spiritual, this is obviously temporal. Fine, £5. So with the Harinam, they were doing the same thing. This is obviously not spiritual. First time we did Harinam in Dublin, we were arrested on two counts. One is causing a public nuisance, and the second was dressing in strange clothing. liable to cause alarm. This was 1973. And so the judge actually, you know, so it's all based on precedent. What you establish by precedent, by legal precedent, that becomes the constitution of the United Kingdom. We have no written constitution. Anyway, so we had to engage the services of a lawyer, and it was a top lawyer, known by someone. She was a Ratasia, who was a fashion model, who knew this top QC, who was a Queen's counselor. And she said, can you help the Hare Krishnas? They're doing their religion and they're getting persecuted. So he came and he gave everybody who was doing Harinam basically legal lessons. And we sat there for 4 sessions and he was saying, this is exactly what you have to do. This is exactly what you have to say. This is exactly what they'll say. This is what you say. And he guided us through a whole script, how to defend Harinam in the United Kingdom. Later on, he was, I don't know whether you've heard of the Zeebrugge disaster. It was a ferry that sank in the, you know, the, yeah. So he went on, and he went on to defend the captain. So he went on to great things. Anyway, he gave us that, and we started doing that. And, you know, but it was established by legal precedent. At the moment, you have one religion, who shall not be named, establishing a lot of legal precedents and even encoding what they don't wish to be spoken in the language and customs of the United Kingdom. Meanwhile, the devotees of Krishna are just embracing tigers and seeing everybody equally and basically getting eaten. So it has to stop. We have to start pushing back. And that pushback was by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he led that march. And nothing was more revolutionary than that peaceful march. And when he got to the Chankazi's place, some of his followers began pulling up the bushes. Because the Chankazi had very nice gardens. So they were pulling up the flowers, pulling up the bushes. This is Chaitanya Bhagavat. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, this is not our way. We won't do this. We'll do it through talking. So on the doorstep, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke with the Chankazi. And eventually, you know, what happened is that Chankazi gave permission. So he gave permission for Harinam to take place. And so that everybody would know that it was authorized, he gave them his own badge. And the badge of the Chankazi was, it was a Muslim badge. There, I've said it. It was a Muslim badge of 2 crescent moons stuck together like that, with a king's crown on the top. So this is an emblem of the Persian Empire that was at that time dominating India. So now devotees go out down Oxford Street holding that sign. So it is Islamic, it's a sign of Islamic supremacy, but we paint the tilak on it. Anyway, we have to be clever. We can't be naive. And we have to see that changes, incremental changes. The frog is definitely boiling. The frog is boiling. So we have to be very careful that our freedom to do what we're doing now, we sort of take it for granted. But we've had to fight just for you to be sitting there. We had to fight 15 years for you to be sitting at Bhaktivedanta Manor worshipping Radha Gokulananda. Everything is a fight. Fight, brothers. Fight, sisters. So as much as we are peaceful people, the fight goes on, but it goes on in an intellectual way. We fight through, sometimes using speech that is calculated to hurt, calculated to uproot conventionality, calculated to uproot comfort. So this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's speech in this verse. Anyone who's been to Glastonbury and has used the toilets in Glastonbury at the end of the festival, you know exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was talking about, a ditch into which is passed soul. So this is material life, he's saying. Material life is like this. Okay? But he's using sharp words to cut away. Another name for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Shlata Sandhi. Shlata Sandhi. Kavi Karnapur gives this name to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shlata Sandhi. It's a good name, isn't it? Let's say it. Shlata sounds German or something, isn't it? Schlatter. Sunday. And it means one who cuts the knots to the material world. This is the name of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One who cuts the knots to the material world. So it is said that one of the disciples of Madhvacharya, his name was Vyadiraj Tirtha, he said when he spoke, his tongue was like a hammer. See, Brahmins have tongues like hammers, but they have hearts like soft butter. Whereas a politician has a mouth like butter, but a heart like a hammer. See? Different. Is that a support? All right. Anything else? A lot of embarrassed shuffling. We have to go. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.